At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside of Ease podcast for June the 4th, 2021. This is episode number 61. Our top stories today: Rimac Navara makes its triumphant debut. BMW iX and i4 details and pricing for US drop. Toyota BZ4X concept comes to America. I'm Dominic Yoni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the wonderful Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge with Tom Malogny. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from Out of Spec Studios. He also puts together fun and not at all fuzzy videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. Please subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. Okay, so welcome everybody. Let's kick it off by talking about what's charging up in our driveways this week. So we don't really talk about what you're driving, Martin, but this week, or for the last couple of weeks, I believe you've had a nice little all-electric vehicle from Hyundai over there in the UK. So tell us about it.
Yeah, so it's the new, I don't know if it's a model year 21 or 22, Kona. Anyway, it's a 21 plate here because we get our two plates, two registration a year. So it's the new, in other words, the new Kona with the facelift on the front. Is that on sale yet in the US? Or I don't know whether you've got that yet. I know that we've talked about it on the podcast before, right. And Hyundai are bringing it. But anyway, so yeah, that's been in the driveway for a couple of weeks. And we're going to have that for a month or two so we can do some proper testing with it. And I've not had a chance to do a really good 70-mile-an-hour range test yet, like you guys do. If you don't know, I live by the beach. And so this time of year, everyone's coming here. So I can get away from my house. But if I want to turn around and come back, it's like 10 miles an hour for the last half an hour of the journey. And so maybe I'll do, you know, late at night or something. So I want to try that out. It's a 64 kilowatt hour battery pack. Really impressed with it so far. Not had a chance to do any miles, and 300 miles in 2 weeks with it. But this is the ultimate edition. It's about £37,000 here in the UK. And so far, yeah, really impressed. Love it. Comes loaded with all the kind of toys that you would want on a car that costs that. So everything is electric inside that top spec Kona. So the seats and the passenger seat as well. The passenger seat's got lumbar support, by the way. That'll be surprising to a few people watching. The tech in it is really good. It's got the Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. It's got wireless phone charging, heated and cooled seats. So you sit inside it and you feel like you've got all the toys that you want around you. In front of you, the head-up display works really well, packed full of information, and the kind of sat nav display on that head up display is pretty good as well. I think the head up display is only on the ultimate trim, or we over here it's called the ultimate trim, on the Kona. So
it's ultimate here too.
So yeah, 400 miles on the clock. It arrived off the boat from Korea, box fresh, and came straight to me. So that's always nice. It's done 400 miles so far, and it's got a lifetime efficiency of 4 miles per kilowatt hour. And it's been stinking hot here for 2 weeks. So the air conditioning's been on max, and I've not really driven it eco driving, I'll say that much. And it's still got 4 miles per kilowatt hour, so that's I think that's pretty good. It's the temperature has been warm here. I've noticed it's got a thing, it comes up battery heating or battery management. You know, you haven't got to turn it on or off, but so I'm not sure that applies in these temperatures. Maybe it's only for cooler temperatures on that. But is that, I don't know if that's new for this model year on the Kona, but either way, that's come up on the screen. But yeah, it's got the new driver display on the new Kona, so the 10.25 inch TFT fully digital display, which is an upgrade on the old Kona, which still looked fine, but it's got fancy pants animations and things on the driver's display. And what I'm really impressed with is a couple of things. The regen is really good, and so Coming from jumping out of our Zoe that we have, it regens okay in that. And I've not driven a Tesla in a while, but it reminds me of that level of one pedal driving. So the regen, super strong, flappy paddles behind the steering wheel on that one. So when you pull on the left one, it brings you to a complete stop. Otherwise, it just gets you down to pretty slow speeds. And so I did do a quick journey up to see the in-laws last weekend, which is about an hour on the motorways, and tried out all the sort of autonomy features, and it works really well. So it has got a front facing camera because it uses that for, I think it's called HDA, Highway Driving Assist. But anyway, it's got lane keep and lane follow and HDA. In other words, it drives itself on the motorway. And so obviously you still have to signal to get it to change lanes. But that worked really, really well. There was no ping pong between the lanes. And although it's got the front camera, you can't access it, but you can turn on. It has got the rear camera sensors all around for the for the parking sensors, and you can turn on the rear camera when you're driving as well at all speeds, which is a nice touch. Not all EVs can do that. So yeah, I've been super impressed so far. Nice little spec on this one, and hopefully we can go and do some range tests very soon.
So generally, it's just you and you have a family of three, I believe. So how do you find the back seat room? Is it big enough for that's the biggest drawback I can think of the corner, right? For size adults, but
yeah. So he is just in between the baby. The baby seats are really bulky, and moving on to that next stage of kind of support seat here, because around kind of 15 kilograms, 3 years old, your kids can go from that kind of big protective baby seat structure into something that's more of a kind of a booster seat, and they use the real seat belt rather than the kind of the five point harness that his seat has at the minute. And that is too big for the Kona, because he just keeps kicking the back of the passenger seat. So maybe something like an e-Niro would be better for families, because the boot isn't great as well. Although, as I found out today, having told everyone for the last 2 weeks, the boot is rubbish. It's got a false bottom. So so I was like, oh, yes, if you lift that up, you just take it and it slides down. The boot gets bigger.
Come over to the Inside EVs forum, and we have a huge Hyundai Kona owners group, and they have all those little tips and tricks for living with your Kona.
I've not even lifted the bonnet of it yet, but I think they've taken the heat pump out of the new Kona. That you need it really, because the efficiency is still so crazy good. I'm finding all those little tips and tricks out. I'll drop by the forum and learn a few things, because we're going to have it in the driveway for a while, so I want to get used to it.
There's no frunk in there, but some owners have managed to move a few things and make their own little tiny frunk.
I might not try that.
Right, maybe not with the manufacturer's car. No.
Otherwise, and it runs on smaller wheels than the, I was looking at the combustion Kona, and it still runs on 17-inch alloys, which I think is the same for the last Kona as well, but they've fixed the aero wheels on this one as well. I think the aero wheel is one of the worst things about the last Kona, because they looked kind of plasticky and cheap. They fixed two things on this, and that is the aero wheels are much, much better now. So they just look, they've still got the tiny little slits. They are very aero, but they've done a nicer job with the metal and the shiny blackness of it. And the other thing is they've got rid of all that black trim that is so common on cars that they want to make look into like crossover style cars. They put it above the wheel arches and all over. After 5 years or so, that black trim starts to wear. I've never seen it wear well. All of that's gone on the new Kona, and it's all body colored, which I think makes a really, really big difference.
Yeah, I like that better. Right? Cool. So, a picture to show us of that?
Let me bring a picture up of it sitting outside.
I saw a picture on your Twitter, on your EV News Daily. You're on Twitter at evnewsdaily.com.
There you go. Let me bring that up and show you. It's in surfy blue, which is very nice as well. And I'm looking forward to
Smurfy blue,
surfy, which is nice, because I do live by the beach. Although I own a wetsuit, but I've never been surfing. But I've got to look the part.
You can wear it while you're driving your surfy blue Kona.
There you go. So that's okay. Sitting outside the house. And with all the body colored stuff, I think it's done much. And they've obviously smoothed off because before it had quite a lot of fussiness on the front and some plastic. It had some silver plastic trim on the old model that ran underneath the lights as well. So although that did disguise the weird off-center charging flap that they have on that, which bugs me, but it shouldn't do. And then, yeah, they've done a much nicer job with the aero wheels on this. And it's been sitting at around 4 miles per kilowatt hour per that's on a lifetime of the car. So I've not reset the thing yet. So I will do, and I'll do a proper eco run and see what I get out of it. But otherwise, I'm really enjoying it.
Well, if you do the 70 mile an hour test, Kyle and I both did it on the earlier versions, and I think we were really close, and our average was 238 miles. So that's your goal, Martin, 238. I actually almost bought a Kona back in 2019, right before I bought my Model 3. I had my mind set on the Kona, and just the point that Dom brought up before, the rear seating. After I really drove it and played around with the back seat, I was like, look, I got to put my parents back here when I drive them around. Yeah. This is just too tight. So then I said, okay, I'll just do the e-Niro, and I couldn't get one. And I waited for like a month or two, and they just weren't coming, and the Kia dealers couldn't tell us when they were even going to be delivered. So I said, I just pulled out my phone and ordered the Model 3 on the app. So, right. By default, Model 3 wins. I'm glad I did, because I'm happy with it. But that my intention was to get the Kona. I like the vehicle that much. If not for the poor rear seating, I would have one today.
It's got something of the on that side profile, something of a Mach-E about it as well, in that color as well, with the privacy glass. But it is tight at the back, actually. And we probably couldn't have one as our daily driver because of that. It's just not big enough in the rear. But apart from that, everything is what you would want on that price segment car. Oh, the lights are LED on this one as well. Nice. So the turning, what do they call them? The turning lights.
Turn indicators?
As you know, when you go around the corner, not all cars have them, but this one is spec with it.
Like follow the headlights?
Yeah, follow direction lights. Yeah. So they're all LED as well.
Nice.
And to be honest with it, I've not touched a single... I've just realized as I'm talking to you now, I've not touched a single setting. So the auto wipers and the auto lights have all worked flawlessly, because I don't even know where the light switch is or the wiper switch. There you go. I should probably have a look, shouldn't I?
But there's a ton of really awesome options in Hyundai Kia products. You have little things like Sounds of Nature, where it'll play like coffee shops in the background, which is hilarious.
Oh, I've got to try that.
Actually the most aggravating thing, because you just hear plates clanking and clashing. But someone somewhere in Korea must find it interesting enough to put it in their car. But yeah, great options. You can have things like auto recirculate when you wash the windshield, so you don't smell your windshield washer fluid. They really think through a lot of neat things in these Hyundai Kia products.
And it just worked faultlessly, in terms of I got in it, I plugged my phone in, up came Apple CarPlay, and then I'm off and away. And that's all I need to learn so far, to go and drive the car before I have a little play in the menu. I did find there's an eco button or an EV button on the homepage, and it makes it really obvious what Tesla owners would call camper mode. It's that as well. So I think it's got some nice EV tricks about it as well. So I'll have a little play with those.
Right on. All right. So, Tom, do you have anything this week?
No, nothing new this week. The last vehicle I had we talked about last week was the Taycan Cross Turismo, which I still miss.
Right. So, Kyle, you're driving something. You just purchased a vehicle, and it's not electric, but it's pretty sweet.
Yeah,
and it's
the something shame.
That we really want to see in electric. So, maybe just give a quick rundown, and maybe tell us what we need to see for electric vehicles to reach that point, to be able to capable of this kind of a vehicle.
Certainly will. And I want to pick up where we left off last show just for a second, because after last show, I was flying to California to go drive the Mach-E
home to
Colorado. I had just done the ID4 trip from Florida to Colorado earlier that week. So I've just been on the road nonstop in tons of different EVs recently, and have to say, hugely impressed with the Mach-E road trip. Just about 1,200 miles. Did it in a day, basically. It was a long day, but up early, home late, and just had to get home so I can come and pick up this thing that I'll tell you about in a second. But man, Mach-E is getting better and better. Now, I still don't think there's an excuse for them releasing a product that didn't work seamlessly with the charging network they partnered with to start. I mean, I think that was unacceptable. Plug and charge never worked on Electrify America early on, and that was unbelievably frustrating. But I will say, based off my experience and with this car, which is an early car, it had like 8,000 miles on it when I picked it up, or 7,000 miles. So it's been in the media fleet for a while. Okay. Was flawless getting home, plug and charge the entire way, the whole way, and never had a charging error, didn't have charging start issues. It was flawless. The charging curve is still terrible, but it was fine to get home to Colorado and just charged it up to 80% at most stops.
Right.
So, and that's what I experienced. I think part of Kyle's frustration is that he gets such early access to the cars that, you know, he was getting the cars before they're fully baked. And I totally understand his position, like, well, then don't give me the damn thing if it's not fully baked, because I'm testing it out, I'm driving it and everything. So I totally get that. But I also understand that very few people had the access that he had to it. And, you know, it wasn't ready yet. But once I got the vehicle, and I've driven three different Mach-Es now, I've never had a problem with plug and charge. I've done it 7 or 8 times, maybe 10 times by now. Every time I've plugged in, and it just simply worked. So, you know, I think a lot of his frustration could be the fact that he had such early access. It you know, it wasn't fully baked yet. I'm not making excuses for Ford, because they shouldn't have given them the car then. But, you know, hey, Porsche gave me the Cross Turismo with a German control module. And it didn't communicate with the chargers and everything too. I mean, the OEMs are so anxious to get their vehicles out there to get, you know, just to get ink on them. And so that's what happens.
Well, I would agree with you typically, which is uncommon of me to agree with Tom Malagni.
Well, we're paid to disagree, just to let all the viewers watch this. You know, Martin and Dom are supposed to be neutral, and Kyle and I fight. So that's
my main frustration with the Mach-E situation, and be totally upfront. Ford put Mustang Mach-E vehicles in the fleet for journalists to use. They would not loan one to us because they knew I would do EV testing on it, charging this, that, and the other. So it sat in our Denver warehouse where the fleet cars are kept with our name on it. And they said, you can't have it until you get a software update. But they're giving it to everyone else. I'm like, I'm at such a competitive disadvantage. So this is why I went to my friend EV Dave, who's just about to hit 10,000 subscribers on his YouTube channel. I said, let's partner up. Let's go buy a Mach-E. Ford won't let us have one. We're losing out on huge videos. I mean, the videos did hundreds of thousands of views for us, which is big. We're a small outlet. And I said, let's go buy one. And it was worth it. And then we bought one at a dealer like anyone else could, and it didn't work. If it was a car Ford gave me and said, hey, this is pre-production, it's early, it's still getting fixed, I'm like, okay, I get that. Thank you for letting me have access early. We went in as random normal customers, didn't tell anyone anything, and bought a car that wasn't finished and could not charge with plug-in charge. That was frustrating. But right, those problems seem to be days of the past. Now we are, I have in a Mach-E media vehicle. It's a California Route 1, so big battery, rear-wheel drive, aero wheels. It's the 300-mile EPA version. Great efficiency, really good driving down the highway. Have to say, all good on that road trip. And now, yeah, transitioning over to what I'm in right now. I don't know, Martin, if you can pull up on Twitter a picture of this thing, but this is a new vehicle I just purchased, and I figured, you know, we're always traveling. We're on planes, in hotels, more than 3 to 5 nights a week recently. We've just never been home. We're constantly on the road. It's difficult to travel with the dogs. So I thought, let's van life it. So Winnebago makes this Revel. It is powered by diesel, but that's not the main point of this. It is powered right now by solar and lithium batteries. So whenever we're stopped, all of our camping is powered completely by the sun. So right now behind me, I have this major control panel. Here, I'll flip it around so you can see really quick. Here we go.
So you don't have to idle while you're camped somewhere. You can just...
Never have to idle. I can shower. Awesome. So all of this equipment is for charging up the batteries, running off solar. You can see that solar charge converter there, our controller on the bottom right. And so flipping it back around now. Sorry.
How many panels are on the roof?
So that's the problem right now. There's only two 100 watt panels, nothing. But yeah, it's still enough to be charging it and charging my laptop right now. But our batteries are close to full because we didn't run the AC or heat last night. Camping out here right off a cliff at Badlands National Park. We're just in the grasslands. Beautiful views out the window. So solar will power this thing, and it should be pretty cool. Yeah, that was at the Winnebago headquarters in Forest City. They don't typically allow factory deliveries, but they made an exception for us because we make YouTube videos, which was super nice of them to fly over there. There's no airport near Forest City. We flew into Minneapolis and took an Uber 2.5 hours down to Forest City. One of the worst Uber drivers ever, by the way. Nice guy, terrible driver. And so we were kind of getting car sick by the end of it because he was like flooring it and letting off and then it and letting off. And I'm like, wow, this poor transmission. It's never in a gear. So
is that all-wheel drive?
It is four-wheel drive. It's got a factory lift kit. It's got knobby tires, KO4s, and going to do some serious off-roading in this thing. And the way I look at this is there's currently no electric van that works for us. There are electric vans. We've tested them. They're conversion Ford Transit by Lightning E-Motors.
Right.
And they're really cool. They're awesome vans. The problem is you get 125 miles of range on a good day, and then it's 2.5 hours to DC charge it. We drove this thing 600 miles yesterday, and I filled up once for 5 minutes. So we have some ways to go here. And this is, you know, certainly I would love for it to be electric. I'd love to be pushing the limits, but we need to learn about RVs. And then as battery technology gets better or other sustainable forms of powering it, we'll move to those. But this is a sort of a necessity for us, I would say, just with the dogs and constantly traveling to drive and review cars.
So it doesn't look huge from the outside. Is that kind of similar to the Amazon van that Rivian's making?
I'm not sure of the size comparison, but I specifically wanted this one because it is the smallest one. This is the short wheelbase, but high roof and high lift kit, which means it's going to be the most maneuverable off-road. Part of the reason we wanted to get an adventure vehicle like this is so we can go on adventures. And the long wheelbases, they make them, but they're harder to get around off-road. So I think this is going to work really well for us. You can see the bed just folds down with a touch of a button back there. Nice. I can lay completely flat. We opened up the doors last night. We had, bug guards everywhere, and it was just absolutely great to have a cool breeze running through. We're in the middle, literally, of the National Forest, just parked off the side of the road. No one's around. It's amazing.
Right on. That sounds awesome. Or there's also actually the GM, what do they call that? Everbright or something. They have like a panel van as well coming. And that has like a lot more range too. So those could be interesting candidates for that kind of conversion.
Yeah. Well, we're going to definitely look into those soon. This is a solution we needed now. Soon as we can upgrade to something that works for us, that lets us get off the grid, Amazon delivery van with a lift kit would be hilariously cool. We're going to dabble in. Yeah, Bollinger's a little too small right now to camp out of. So
I think they have a bigger chassis.
Yeah.
They have a bigger stretch chassis with, and those got like the portal axles and all, which have like crazy off-road capability.
Yeah, well, you know, it all sounds good, but
until they make one.
We'll see. My guess is we're a couple of years away from seeing a viable electric RV. By that point, this thing will have it for a couple of years, and we're ready for something new.
All right. Well, let's see see if the EV industry can catch up with your needs.
Yeah, let's see.
All right. So let's talk about the news of the week. Are we ready for that? Yes. Okay. So, this is so great. It's been years in the making, but the Rimac Navara has just made its official debut. This superlative wonder of a car has a price tag of 2 million euro. That's over 2.4 million US dollars. And I would argue it's worth every penny. It may even be underpriced. That sounds crazy, I know, but hear me out. It is the quickest production car ever to be homologated. It's worldwide homologated. It means it can be sold in any country around the world. It is so quick and still improving that one of the journalists that was invited to Croatia to put together video for its debut actually set an unofficial quarter mile record at 8.2 seconds at 171.79 miles an hour on an unprepped surface. I would not be surprised to see it do an 8.5 quarter at some point. Now, I doubt that any of us here and possibly out there even will buy one of the 150 copies of the Navara that are being made. probably not even a used one. So why talk about it? Well, for one, it's just a great story. Mate Rimac started this company in 2009 with not a whole lot of experience about electric cars. He was putting together a BMW conversion at the time, an E30. And I saw him posting, looking for advice on DIY electric car forum, which that's a site that still exists today, by the way. And I remember he came across as super ambitious and undeterred by naysayers and negativity, just a really great attitude. And now a dozen years later, those qualities and an incredible work ethic has produced, I would say, the most fantastic car ever built. And while maybe we'll never own a Navara, at some point we may own a car with a small bit of its DNA. That's because the technology that went into this car, the store of knowledge that was created, will find itself in cars from other companies like Porsche, which has an ownership stake in Rimac, and Hyundai. And Rimac tends to keep its client list pretty close to its chest. But the truth of it is that Rimac Automobili isn't an automaker, really. It's a technology company. So with that out of the way, let's talk about the car a little bit. So it's got 1,914 horsepower and 1,740 pound-feet of torque, despite having a carbon fiber monocoque, which is a singular work of art in itself. It's just beautiful. If you can find a picture of that online, it's just, chef's kiss. So it weighs 4,740 pounds, but it does have a 120 kilowatt hour battery pack. So it comes by that weight pretty honestly. So that's, of course, quite heavy for a supercar. That's over 1,000 pounds more than a McLaren, for example. Still, in a straight line, it can wipe the floor with pretty much with any supercar ever built, with a claimed 1.85 second 0-60, 8.6 seconds is the official quarter mile time. It does 186 miles an hour. That's 300 kilometers an hour, which that's why it's a weird number there for us in freedom units, in 9.3 seconds. Under 10 seconds, you're going 186 miles an hour. I mean, not that you would do that, but and top speed is 258 miles an hour, which is, ridiculous. You have to go to the salt flats to do that or something. So it's got a motor and reduction gearbox for each wheel, and that allows it to torque vector probably better than any car built to date. It hasn't done an official Nürburgring lap yet, but personally, I would not be surprised to see it beat the fastest production car lap ever, which is like a 6 minute 44 second to almost 45 seconds by a Lamborghini Aventador SVJ. So that said, Rimac considers the Navara to be a GT or a Grand Tour. So the suspension is soft enough to be enjoyable to drive some distance in it. There's just so much to this car, but here's just a few neat facts about it. That it was originally conceived to have a single speed reduction gearbox. And then the Tesla Roadster made its debut boasting crazy acceleration numbers. And then, so they decided to go to a two speed gearbox, for the rear wheels, at least, to beat the Tesla Roadster. But Mate never liked the idea of a two speed gearbox. So he figured out a way to get even better performance without them. So it's one speed, single reduction gearboxes all the way around. The drivetrain is completely configurable. It can be all-wheel drive, it can be front-wheel drive, it can be rear-wheel drive, it can be whatever proportion of those things you want. It's just completely configurable the way you want it. The data available to view is like mind-boggling. You can see real-time torque for each motor, for example. It's steer-by-wire, it's brake-by-wire. There's no steering column to deal with, so that frees up the designers to kind of make it the shape they want. And speaking of the shape, the looks of it, it's not crazy. It's not really futuristic looking. It's maybe not the most beautiful supercar we've ever seen. But they wanted to be more of a timeless design that wouldn't look super dated over the years. So that is what it is. They've got the same designer there since day one that's been working with Mate. So the front and rear drivetrains are separated. They were individually cooled because they didn't want the run tubing from the front to the back. So that allowed to get, to keep the sills on the side where you get in the car relatively narrow. So that's weird just because they wanted that, you know, narrow sill. So that dictated how they ran the cooling for the car. It's kind of nuts. So let's see what else. So every single part of the car is made for it. They make everything, pumps, fans, everything, bolts, which is, that's how they develop a lot of the intellectual property that they can then sell on to their customers. So Kyle, have you seen the videos that the handful of journalists shot with this thing, and how badly do you want to have a go?
Yeah, I unfortunately haven't seen many of the videos yet, but heard you talking about it, heard others talking about it, of course. You know, it's an interesting car because from a technological standpoint, it's probably the most advanced EV when it comes to powertrain technologies. I mean, we are seeing amazing things come out of Tesla, amazing things come out of Lucid. This is probably a step above for battery pack density. I mean, everything Rimac's doing amazing. And as you mentioned, they're more of a technology company, and this is a way for them to develop and then showcase the products and individual components that they're working on for their own vehicles. Very cool. Is it for me? I don't know if that's the case, because I think, let me back up for a second. If you're in the market for this kind of car, you already have tons of other supercars that make lots of noise and shoot flames. And that's perfect. If you have like a collection, this is the perfect addition. It's a whole nother spin. If I was getting my first supercar, which I don't expect to ever be able to do in my lifetime, I think this was not what I would go for. I want the drama, the noise, the flames. I don't think you can have enough character with an EV. However, I have not driven it. And I think it requires serious debate and understanding, as well as driving time, to figure out this thing. So, you know, we all need to go and have, you know, a couple thousand miles in this just to make sure we like it.
Well, we'll see if we can get in touch with Mate and have you try it out, because I think it will change your mind. I think you'll find it produces all the drama that you can get
into. With 2,000 horsepower under your right foot, I'm sure you can get into some spicy situations.
I mean,
this sounds amazing.
It shows like there's a video of you can see it, and this is a video from Rimac, so we can play some of that. But you know, you can slip the rear end out, you know, going around a turn, you know, on pavement, but you know, without even a second thought. Navarro, by the way, the name is from, it's a storm system that blows in off the Mediterranean. It's a Croatian word. So, and it comes with lots of drama and lightning. And so they thought it was a fitting name for the car. Tom, is this, what do you think?
Well, I want to know, when did the media loan start?
Right.
Right. Listen, you know, I'm kind of in between you and Kyle. I'm really excited about the technology, and you know, you should just take this whole segment, because you know more about this car. You could tell you're like one of their biggest fans. But I'm excited about the technology, the fact that what they're working on is going to then cross-pollinate over to other companies and other vehicles. And one of the things that and I've mentioned it before on the podcast, that really I think is amazing about this electrification wave now, how we're moving into electric powertrains, is that this little startup can do something like this. And in a few years, kind of be like an example for these, you know, like for Porsche to learn from. You know, that could never happen really with internal combustion engine vehicles. I mean, it was kind of happening back in the 40s and 50s when, you know, the industry wasn't as powerful and advanced as it is now. But now we have the ability to have these startups be industry leaders. And, you know, that's what's exciting to me. And you've got the big legacy brands kind of not sure what should they do. You know, should they try to do something radical? If you want to go on that and say Hyundai is maybe on that edge with the Ioniq 5, trying to really push the envelope, or should they do like what BMW, and we're going to talk about it really soon, just kind of electrify their line and not step too much out of their comfort zone. And you know, what they're trying to figure out which way they should go with electrification. And then you've got these startups like Tesla and Lucid and Rimac that are just saying, to hell with everything you guys are doing. We're just going to, you know, start with a clean sheet of paper, and the sky's the limit. And that's what really excites me about these startups. And you know, the more than the vehicle itself. You know, I probably, you know, I don't yearn for that vehicle. I'm more closer to Kyle with that. I think it'd be a blast to drive, you know, but it's not really, you know, what excites me. What excites me is that this guy put this together and built this thing. And now everybody else is drooling over it. These companies that have billions and billions of dollars in their war chest to develop whatever they want are saying, geez, that, you know, we should buy what that little guy has. And that's what's cool.
Right. So I think because of Remax, I think the next Taycan edition of the Taycan won't have a 2-speed gearbox, for instance. That's just my little prediction because it doesn't need one and it takes up range and you can
The German way. It is not simplicity. The German way is add complexity and then sell it as feature.
And weight and everything. I forget that. I remember when they took the 2-speed gearbox out of that, they saved like, it was an amazing amount of weight, like 60 kilograms or something in that area, 100 some
pounds. It's unbelievably overcomplicated for just a little metric. And they still put it on all the cars. They shouldn't put it on the rear wheel drives, but they're doing it. And, you know, whatever. It's a Porsche way. They overcomplicate things. Can't deny how well it drives, though.
So I was just going to say real quick. So if you type a Navara into the search field on Inside of EVs, you'll find that there's a post, and we've posted there's a post with all the videos from the different outlets that published it. And so if you want to watch the racing, the like just fast racing, there's a one where it beats a SF Nanni Stradale, a Ferrari. But like, we can't play it for you here because it will get penalized by YouTube. But it's just amazing to see what it can do. Like, even on a roll, it's nuts. It just destroys that thing. But the video that I really liked was the one with from the Late Break Show with Johnny. Forget his last name, but
Johnny Smith.
Johnny Smith. That's right. How could I forget that? It's like it's such a rare name. I really really like Johnny's presentation here. That's definitely worth watching. And yeah, I don't know. I love this thing, and I'd like to talk about more. I invited Mate on the show. I didn't speak to him directly, but just through his office, we haven't heard back. So I don't know. Maybe if he gets back in touch with us, we can have him. But yeah,
There's some nice touches on the Johnny Smith video. He says there's a phrase. He says it's because this car's got drift mode, and they said go play with drift mode, and he does, and he comes back. He says that's properly scrambled my innards. He has a way with words, but nicely describes the car. He also says in that, because he's been, you know, in automotive journalism forever, magazines and TV and his own channel now, and he says it's very rare with a hypercar, or it's rare with some, you know, any cars, but it's rare with a car like this where they give you the kind of metaphorical keys and say, we'll be over here, you know, go and have a play. And they did. Invited those journalists out to Croatia, but and said, just go play, like go and do some. This is not a prepped surface, it's an old runway. Go and see what happens, and just have fun, hoon around. There was no overbearing PR team telling him what he could and couldn't say in the Car Wow video. Maybe it was Car Wow, the Matt Watson one. They had the Ferrari SF90 Stradale next to it, and some nice moments in that where at one point they give the Ferrari a head start. And was like, all right, let's go now. And at one point they're kind of doing, I don't know, maybe 100 or 150. Like, oh, we'll let the Ferrari go ahead. And they're like, okay, now we go. And it's that acceleration that, you know, when you're doing 50, 100, 150, it just keeps pulling. It's not just that off the line. Because at this point now, we're just battling physics of moving EVs from 0 miles an hour. So, yeah, that was a nice moment. Nice moment as well where Matt Watson was in the Ferrari and Mate was in his car. And then they were like, well, let's swap around. They're like, well, we can't because he's not allowed to drive this car. And we can't say why, but he's not allowed. And as Dom makes a point, like, I'm not saying that they're going to start working with Ferrari or supplying Ferrari, but there are complicated relationships around, you know, Rimac in terms of, and there's a nice story. It was either on their own YouTube channel, because they've been releasing weekly videos with Mate, which have been amazing and haven't,
you know, to that.
Everyone should be watching them, because it's literally this guy making a weekly video about what's on his mind. It's incredible access. It was either on that or another story because of the VW investment in that company. I think he tells a story, or I've read somewhere about the first time he went to look around the Bugatti factory And again, things like that have inspired him, because he's like, okay, well, we've got all the technology, and I know how to make an electric motor and a lithium ion battery. And then looked around the craftsmanship. I imagine it's, you know, if you go to look around Rolls Royce or something here in the UK, and he went to look around Bugatti for the first time and was like, oh my goodness, I know nothing about creating like works of art, masterpieces. And then that inspired him to, you know, every switch and those billet aluminium dials, everything in the car is a result of that wanting an emotional connection to the car. Because you could put it all on a big touchscreen, but he didn't want that. And he wanted something to connect you with the car, the things that you touch and see. So there's lots of lovely little stories. Yeah, go and subscribe to that. And I'll watch all the videos around it as well. Some really nice moments. And it's not overly PR controlled. And it's really, and he's in all of the videos as well. Like, everyone just says, oh, can we have a chat to you? And then he'll just talk all day about his this labor of love.
Right. He's a great guy to talk to. I've had the pleasure of meeting him a couple of times at Mountain Pikes Peak in 2015, I think. Yeah, it was great. On the late break show video, there's also really awesome footage of just like driving the thing along the Croatian coastline. It's just so flipping beautiful there. It's like, oh man, we need to get one of you guys there, and I would love to go personally myself, but I think I love to see Kyle take it, just because he needs he's the mind that needs them. I think it can change the most, and he also has 100%. The skills.
This is a lot of car to handle, right? You know, I have a lot of experience driving very basic cars very quickly.
But it's got controls. It'll help you. Oh, it's.
I like to turn all that stuff off anyway. It's a lot of car. It demands respect. I'm sure, you know, once I get behind the wheel, I can see if it's easy or if it's going to bite you. Everything sounds like it's been engineered wonderfully. Louis makes a good point. He's like, you guys are soft pedaling this car. You know, it's the craziest car ever. And you're absolutely right. On paper, this is the craziest car ever. Emotionally, I don't get excited by numbers on paper. This isn't why I'm like a huge Tesla fanboy. Mad respect, own a Tesla, like them, but numbers on paper don't excite me at all. Yeah. So I will probably, as he predicts, get much more excited once I can drive one, and I'll be like, this is the greatest thing ever. but this is just how I work, right? We're not perfect human beings. I can't predict what the driving experience is going to be like based off of numbers on a white sheet of paper, because there's no relation to that. We don't have hypercar experience every day. We review, you know, RAV4s and Hyundai Konas generally, and, you know, occasionally we get a Taycan or we get, you know, a really hot 911 Turbo S, but this is a whole nother stratosphere of unrelation. Cannot relate mentally to something like this. I'm new in reviewing cars, only been doing it a couple of years. Maybe one day I'll be like, oh, well, I drove every hypercar on sale, so I kind of have an idea of what this will be like. It's definitely a stretch. So, you know, just because I can't relate to what the experience will be like, it's hard for me to get crazy excited about it, because in my head, supercars are supposed to drive terribly, look really good, and shoot lots of flames and noise. Because, you know, historically, that's what they do.
I just want to know, when do we see the first pictures of one of these, like, wrapped around a telephone pole? Long after they're in the hands of people? I mean, this is like too much power for mere mortals. You
know, it's kind of funny. That's why Rimac is really so well known now, because the guy from what's the show?
Top Gear. So it's Richard Hammond from Top Gear rolled one down the side of a mountain. But they only made eight of those project. Is it 8 or 10 of the project one?
Yeah, not many. Yeah,
and handful. He wrecked one. It's a really good point I think a couple of you have made. This is a company that made eight versions of their first car and 150 of their second car.
It's a big change.
They've got 1,000 employees, and yet they've made the greatest thing ever. Like, it's why hasn't Porsche? Why isn't this a Porsche? Because lots of reasons, but you know, that's so cool.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or a Bugatti. I mean, a Bugatti. I saw a Bugatti for sale. It's like $25 million. It's some like crazy number. So, you know, 2 point whatever million dollars is not but for this
it's
kind of
really not bad for the car. There's plenty of people that will spend the money. They'll sell every single one of them they can make without having to advertise it. You know, there's plenty of people with big collections that will just buy anything. The interesting thing here, though, is to develop the aura and the story around the car early on in its life cycle, so that when we see them roll through auction or at car events like Amelia Island or Pebble Beach in 20 or 30 years, we'll be like, oh, remember when this car beat the SF90, which isn't, I mean, it's an impressive car, but that's not really a head-to-head. But you know what I mean? It's important to generate stories and a general aura around the vehicle early on. And I think they're going to be on their way to doing something very cool. They need to put together awesome stories, though, to generate a legacy for this vehicle.
One of the buyers is Formula One world champion Nico Rosberg, and he's got he's kind of gone to his own YouTube kind of media empire now, and he made a video last year about driving the prototype, and it's great because even though you know Marte clearly likes driving fast, when they put them both and let Nico Rosberg drive it, there's even a nice bit where you sort of see Marte just sort of hold onto the seat just a little bit tighter than he was earlier in the video, and they're really going for it. And so all of those stories around like the Formula One, you know, world champion has bought one and is making videos about it, as Carl says, all of that is adding to this story, this aura around this company that is ultimately great for electric vehicles because it becomes a halo vehicle.
Yeah, we didn't talk about the charging curve. Somebody mentions, please test the charging curve.
don't ask us to test anything practical. That's not the point of this car. Someone's like, how big is the front?
It charges fast, though. It's fast charging.
Have someone
crazy.
Follow you behind, you know, with all your stuff.
Kyle, if I need to drive it from New Jersey to Florida, I need to know how long I'm going to be stopping, you know, at the Electrify America sites.
You're not going
to
want
every 200 miles. I mean, we need to know this.
Has it got plug and charge? Will it work with Electrify America?
Exactly. I can see Kyle plugging in and it doesn't work. And in his video,
this is rubbish.
Rimac sucks. Plug and charge doesn't work. What's wrong with these people?
There's a nice bit in one of the videos as well where they tried to kind of draw him on Tesla and what have you, but he didn't. But they did say, look, when electric vehicles aren't at 100%, their performance gets worse. And at what point in your state of charge does the performance of this car fall away?
Well, now that's accurate testing. Every car needs testing for its intended purpose. And that's the kind of testing this does. Recharging is important because you're going to go to the track, you're going to charge it, you're going to go back to the track. But road trip, not important.
He said on this, they've got it down to 35%. So at 35% state or 36% state of charge, it is still the headline numbers. And you could see he was so proud of that. He was like, that's a really good question. It's a really good point. Yeah. You don't want to get to 90% state of charge and have a lemon on your hands. And so just the work they've done, it seems amazing.
Right. I mean, when they brought the Concept One, the first car to the OS a few years back, and they did a bunch of a series of drag races with what's the Porsche hybrid, 918? No.
Yes, the 918 hybrid.
918, right. And it you know, ran, you know, run after run, and it beat the 918. And actually, it was the 918 that overheated, and they had to stop to finish the day off.
So this is an interesting story I'll share, and I don't know how much of this I should share, but I'll give you a taste. A really good friend of mine was on the 918 project at Porsche, very executive level engineer, but not in it for like the status of engineering. He's like so into the technical aspects. German dude, works in Weissach. Was talking to him about Rimac recently, and he was just like, what they're doing is alien technology. It's the craziest thing he's ever seen. And he's been a part of the most iconic cars out of Porsche for the last 30 years. And you know, it's just really cool, and absolutely love what they're doing over there.
Yeah, and that's, I've talked to people from so many different major OEMs, and they'll admit that the startups are the ones that can do this. We can't, they can say they start from a clean sheet of paper all they want, but they're always building on the technology that they've developed and improving it and making it better and adding a battery so it's a hybrid. And they will never get the green light to throw out everything they've done and just completely, you know, start from scratch. There's a few exceptions. BMW did it when they did BMW i and created the i3 and the i8. That program, they had an entire team of people that they said, they even hired them they rented facilities, so they weren't working in BMW. They rented new labs and offices so they can completely separate their employees from the BMW employees and develop the BMW I completely on their own. Now, we know that that hasn't turned out well. At BMW, after 4 or 5 years, they got cold feet and they switched over. And now we see the i4 and iX, which we're going to talk about shortly, which I actually like, but that's not those are not the children of the I brand, you know, from the i3 and the i8, maybe for better or for worse. But very rarely do you get that. Startups can do it. They can just completely forget about everything. And that's what we see here with Rimac. And that's fantastic. And I know I've said it 100 times here on the podcast. It's one of the things that excites me so much about electrification is that we're going to take huge leaps forward in technology, whereas we were getting these little incremental increases from the legacy OEMs.
All right. So let's move on to the next story. But I just want to say I can't wait to see what Rimac decides to do for their next vehicle, because I don't know if they're going to go supercar again, or maybe they're going to try something weird. I'd like to see something weird, because this is like kind of like the pinnacle of supercar for a while. And so, yeah. Anyway, so if we can get them on the show, we can ask them that question. So let's come back down to earth for a bit. So BMW just released details and pricing on two different electric vehicles for the US, the i4 and the iX. So let's talk about the i4 first. It's basically the electric version of the BMW 4 Series Grand Coupe. It will come in rear-wheel or all-wheel drive, and it has a 83.9 kilowatt hour battery pack with 81.5 kilowatt hour usable. It's in real world drive. It gets about 300 miles of range, and the price tag is $56,395, including destination. It has a 5.7 second 0-60, so not devastating, but okay. The all wheel drive version, which is known as the i4 M50. Puts out 536 horsepower and 586 pound-feet of torque. It can only put out its maximum power for 10 seconds at a time using a sport boost function. But in any case, it can do 0 to 60 in 3.9 seconds and hit 140 miles per hour at top speed. The performance does come with a range penalty, as is often the case in electric cars, and the i4 M50 is said to be good for 240 miles of range. So that's a bit of a hit there. On the plus side, it can DC fast charge at a rate of 200 kilowatts, and it can get 90 miles of range back from a low state of charge, of course, in about 10 minutes. And they have a deal with EVgo, so, and that gives you a whopping $100 charge credit. So,
whoa! I'm gonna go buy one right now.
I know, that's an incentive. Let me tell you. So, Tom, with a price so close to that of a Tesla Model 3 performance, say. But with less actual performance, who is going to buy the BMW i4 when it is available in Q1 of 2022 next year?
BMW enthusiasts.
There you go.
That's who's going to buy it. Yeah. You know, BMW, as I alluded to earlier, decided to take the conservative route with their electrification program. They shifted from that radical Project I that they had started back in 2009. And they said, you know what, we're just going to make electric BMWs. We're going to stick to our comfort zone. This is, you know, a 4 Series Grand Coupe that has an electric powertrain. Nothing outside of the ordinary. You know, and look, I actually think it looks nice. I think it's a nice vehicle. I've talked to people that have driven them. They're supposed to drive really, really well, especially the higher performance, the M50. Drives really well. But, you know, there's nothing there that moved the needle, in my opinion. You know, there's nothing there that said, wow, look at this new BMW electric vehicle. It's just like, oh, that's a really nice 4 Series Grand Coupe. And you know what? You plug it in. You don't use gas. And hey, every OEM is going to take different paths within their electrification program. Sure. We kind of see where BMW is going with this now. They're comfortable with what they do. They're very successful with what they do, and they're just going to make electric BMWs. There's no vehicle to load. There's no real crazy charging abilities here. Now, I know you mentioned 200 kilowatts, as we talked about a million times here in that show. We need to see the full charging curve. You know, I saw it with the iX. They said 10 to 80% in 40 minutes. That's not really anything that's groundbreaking. That would average less than 150 kilowatt.
They did post it.
Give me one second. Give me a second.
I can do the math, and they said 10 to 80%. So that's 70% of 106 kilowatt hour battery pack. That's like 74 kilowatt hour.
I have the spec coming up. The charging curve. Didn't they,
yes,
Martin?
Hold on. Yeah. One second.
I didn't see that yet. I just did the math quickly.
So it peaks at just over 200.
Yeah.
And then it's going to step back. But also, no, Tom, I saw that. And that was really naughty, just press release, because they were like, yeah, it'll do in less than 40 minutes. But yeah, like it was like 31 minutes, which is technically less than 40 minutes. But it was really badly written, because then when you go and look at the time,
you realize what was written.
Yeah. But well, they said that 40 minute figure. And I'm like, that looks rubbish. But when you go look at it, they said, well, less than 40 minutes. But yeah, like 31 is, I think, was the real number. And you go, well, that's poorly written if you're sending out info about an EV. Like, just give me the exact number. Yeah. Don't give me like the, oh, it'll get less than 40 minutes to 80%. So, but yeah, they sent out the charge curve. So that looks quite nice.
I don't know. I like to see a little bit flatter along the, you know, when you first plug in, you really want to see that higher. Even if it's not 200, you want to be above 150, in my opinion, up to close to 70%. Charged. And, you know, like Audi and Porsche does that just, you know, fantastically. You know, you plug in and, you know, you don't get that staircase after. I mean, that's, you know, that's like what, 25%. And all of a sudden you're walking the stairs down, you know, down to the basement.
I'm not walking the stairs to the basement. That's the new term.
I'm not impressed with the basement, folks.
Is it terrible? It's not terrible. Don't get me wrong. Like, it's much better than a lot of EVs out there. Talk to Chevy Bolt owners. But this was, you know, their first, you know, real, we're going to electrify the iX and the i4, these are our serious electric cars. You know, the i3 was a little funny, you know, looking thing that we were just experimenting with carbon fiber. This is what we can do. That doesn't impress me. It's fine, but like, you know, I was really hoping BMW would come out, would be like, wow, look at what they've been working on. And, you know, vehicle to load, you know, what. 175 kilowatt DC fast charge rate up to 75%, all this stuff. And we're getting a nice, competent car here. But nothing pushes the needle. Nothing excites me.
Okay. So let's talk about the other one for a second real quick, because we might have some of the similar comments about it. Mm-hmm. So this is the BMW iX is also coming. It's the more interesting vehicle of the two, in my personal opinion. It's built to be an electric vehicle, even though it sits on the cluster architecture platform. They call it the CLAR, which is also under some combustion cars. This crossover SUV is planned for Q1 of 2022 as well. So that's, you know, next January, February, March. And it starts at $83,295, including destination, which is getting up there. In the US, it only comes in the more powerful xDrive 50 configuration. That gives you 516 horsepower and an unknown amount of torque, but probably in the 500 foot-pound neighborhood. 0 to 60 is a very adequate 4.6 seconds, and top speed is 124 miles per hour, which is fine, I guess. It sports a battery pack of 111.5 kilowatt hours, 106.3 kilowatt hour usable. Like the i4, it has a peak fast charge rate of 200 kilowatts and takes 40 minutes to charge from 10 to 80%, which is, as Tom was saying, not mind blowing. A couple of the features that our writer Andre called out in his write up on the Inside EV's channel or website are special lift related shock absorbers, which have an extra built in hydraulic dampening, along with an optional two axle air suspension. And we're looking at the pictures of the interior right now. I don't know. It's a bit different, quite a change from their traditional look, I think, inside. So, Kyle, is this good enough an EV effort for BMW at this stage in the game? It's like priced close to the revamped Model X, but I'm not convinced looking at the pics and specs. Yeah,
well, I don't think there's much comparison here, Model X or not. You're either into Tesla or you're not. It's sort of starting to become a harsher blend line there because of all the enthusiasm going on both sides.
Pick another high-end SUV.
It'd be closer to like e-tron or something like this. But, you know, the BMW thing is whenever I read about them or see them, you know, in media when they're first being launched and we get, you know, to see all the pictures and everything, I'm always like, well, that's pretty weird. And then they show up at the house and I spend some time with them and I'm like, oh, I really am a BMW guy, am I not? So, you know, similar thing happened with the 4 Series this week. I have a 430i at home. I only drove it for a couple hours, but the guys are back filming with it today. And I was like, wow, in the photos, I'm like, I hate the grill. That's really ugly. I spend time with it in person. I'm like, oh, it's actually growing on me. Oh, that's not. It's a BMW. It drives well. And so I think that's what you're going to get. You're going to get, like Tom said, BMW enthusiasts who will find the highlights of this car that no other brand can offer. My friend Tommy at TFL Car, I know he's watching now. He just commented. He got to play around with both the i4 and the iX. And this is a interesting thing. So if you're interested, he's done walkarounds and like stuff on both of these cars. Check out TFL Car for those. And I briefly glanced at those. I'm like, okay, I get it. It actually is pretty futuristic and looks cool. When you compare it to other models on paper, it doesn't compete. You know, it's not pushing the limits, like Tom said, doesn't move the needle. But I think increasingly that's becoming less important. As long as you have enough range to get around, you can charge up at a station. It comes down to the personality of the car, the vibe, and how does it make you feel? And I think that is where we need to start shifting our approach over the next 1 to 2 years, because you can get around in an iX. You can get around in an i4. The argument used to be, can you get around in a Bolt with 55 kilowatt charging? I would argue not easily. So I think it's a lot just how does the car make you feel? It's why I like the ID4 so much. It's not great on paper, but it makes me happy. It feels great. So I think this will be kind of interesting to watch unfold. Can't wait to have a go. And I think we're going to be able to catch up with these cars pretty soon. So looking forward to that.
I'd be great.
How does this charge curve make you feel, Tom? Because it's so different to the i4.
Wow.
It's the same powertrain technology, but a different battery. And now this one holds all the way through to must be 50%, almost 200 kilowatts.
Yeah, that's a lot better. That's a lot better. You know, not just the top charge rate, but you see it even holds above 150 kilowatts. It looks like up to about 65%, maybe 60%, somewhere around there. I'd love to see them push that to 70, 75%, the 150 kilowatt, because then that really gets you to 80% charge really quickly. But that's a much better curve. As you compared it to the first one, you could see where with the i4, it only held that maximum charge rate till about 20% and then dramatically dropped down. This one does that nice drop to like maybe 155, 160, but then it holds that for another 10%, which is great. I like this charge curve a lot better. And also, I want to reiterate, I want to walk back what I said before. Maybe it sounded like I hated these cars. I don't. I think they're both really nice cars, and I'm sure I'll love them. I see Tommy from the Fast Lane is commenting again here. I'm sure I would enjoy them. I was tied into BMW's electrification program for a long time, guys, for many years, and I kind of expected them to remain an industry leader, which they were forming that back, you know, 10 years ago. And I feel like they just fell back to the pack and are content with that now. And that's what bothers me. I think they're really nice cars. I'm sure I'd love to drive them. I bet you, I mean, I'll get them on press loans. I bet you I'm going to have great reviews of them. I just was hoping to see some cool things that are cutting edge a little bit more, like, you know, vehicle to load, you know, maybe even a faster charging, a charging rate, which I think that's fine. But just give us something that you're out there pushing the envelope. I didn't see that in these two vehicles. Maybe I'll feel better, different after driving them. But I think BMW is going to do okay with them. The price is a little bit of a concern for me. You know, at a starting 84 for the iX. You know, you're not going to be able to get that thing for less than 95 without.
Yeah, but you also know everyone's going to lease them for whatever down $1,000 a month.
Right. Well, did you see? I saw a leasing program for the iX, and I forget it was like $4,000 down and $1,200 a month for 3 years. They had that announced. It might have been 6,000 down. I forget.
Well, that's honestly not bad, yeah. And not dissimilar to like an X550i or something like that. You know, people don't realize it. We have a lot of audience that may not live in metropolitan areas, but if you live by Tom in New Jersey, every other car is a BMW, and probably 80% of them are on leases, and everyone just gets a new one every 3 years, and that's how they operate. It's 90%. Where I grew up in Connecticut. Yeah. In Colorado, where I am now, maybe we see a little bit of less of that with the high-end vehicles, but in L.A., in New York, in Miami, it's all big BMW, Mercedes products, all with the big engines, and they're all leased, and they're all whatever down $1,000 a month, and now that's what it usually will come out to be.
The BMW Germany site talked about the pricing for the xDrive 40, and I didn't see BMW of America talk about it. So I'm presuming.
We don't get the 40. Yeah.
So that's confirmed then. So you're not getting the xDrive 40,
right?
Well, we do.
It's got 50.
So the 40's got a 71 kilowatt hour usable battery, peak charge rate of 150, but it's a lot cheaper. But I'm just guessing they're thinking with the range of 230 miles, it's just not going to suit US buyers, which is a real shame. So
that wouldn't get 230 EPA, I don't think, with the 71. Okay.
I mean, it'd
probably be right around 200.
Yeah, WLTP is more optimistic. But the bigger battery, the only battery that you'll be getting, has an average charge speed of, it was either 126 or 136 kilowatts from 10 to 80%, which again is much better. So if you can find yourself a nice fast charger and you do need to go all the way to 80, 120? I did write it down. 126 kilowatts to 80% average charge. That is probably about as good as you're going to get outside of Taycons, e-tron GTs, and the new Korean 800 volt platform. I mean, that's
almost everyone,
you know. Yeah. So that's really good. It's really good.
It is really good.
The charge curve on the smaller battery is like 90 something kilowatts over that to 80%, which is still pretty good.
Yeah, but here's the thing: it all comes down to with these cars, how do they drive? BMWs are for driving enthusiasts. They always have been. Even people who aren't into cars buy BMWs because they just drive well. So that's going to be the big measure here. We got to do some performance testing, efficiency testing, all the stuff we normally do, and then I think Tom and I can make up our minds and say, you know, we probably disagree with each other on some point. So I still
want to see 80%. In less than a half an hour on a luxury, a premium $80,000 luxury vehicle. People do not want to hang out at 7-Eleven and Wawa if they're going on a road trip. Okay. Right.
Very true.
This is a luxury vehicle. Look, the Bolt can get away with it. It's entry level, although it should be a little bit higher. This is, you know, BMW's developed its own platform for this. Everything's, you know, this is our Halo future technology car. And like I said, I still like it, and I hate to keep dwelling on charging, but that's a pain point for people that are transitioning from electric from their gas BMWs to electric. Even though they might not even go on a lot of road trips, the fact that when they're in the sales the dealership and they're talking about this and they're saying, well, you know, twice a month I drive, you know, 500 miles away to our cabin or whatever, you know, how long do I have to charge? You know, if they can pound. Quickly go back and say, oh, less than a half an hour and you'll be back up to 80%. You know, it's like a 25 minute stop, you know, use the restroom, grab a bite to eat. That can sell it. But if they say, well, in less than 40 minutes.
It sounds terrible. Yeah.
It just sounds terrible. Yeah. You know, even though it's not that much worse. Believe me, this is, you know, I harp on this because it's what I do. I one of the things I do is train dealers and that pain point is when the customer asks them, how long do I have to stop when I'm going to visit grandma? And when you could say less than a half an hour, oh, that's not bad. But once you get over that point, it could be 38 minutes. It sounds like so much longer. And that's why I'm getting hung up on this, guys.
Hyundai did that with their when they went to the press with the launch specs of the IONIQ and the Kia EV6. They led with that 100 miles, or was it 90 miles of range in 5 minutes? Because they just picked their complete peak charge bit, and they're like, if you plugged in for five minutes, and they're like, well, you had 100 miles in 5 minutes. Right. And it's like, that's a great stat. And after that, it might fall off, and we'll wait and see till we test those cars. But like, they got it. They're like, oh, that's a, and all the press went with that. Like, hey, so many miles in 5 minutes. Because 5 minutes is such a small amount of time.
Yeah. But it those would get to 80% in 18 minutes, which is, which is also, by the way, what the Rimac Navara gets to. It's 120 kilowatt hour packed 80% in 18 minutes.
Yeah, but you see, the Rimac can't tow. You see, the iX will tow. And that's very important for
the deal.
That's for the Nordic, you know, for Nordic countries, for Norway and Sweden and Denmark.
Crushing my dreams here.
Towing is very important. Oh, well. So
they'll make the Rimac tow.
The iX tows, it actually tows a lot more than the Model X. And you see a lot of Model X's towing in Europe. So it's 250 kilograms more than the Model X. So, you know, they're focused on things that I guess their buyers are going to be like, hey, can I tow my boat or my van up to the cabin? And yes, you can.
Okay.
Wait a minute. I just have a question. We're like 20 minutes into discussing BMW. Have we not talked about the new the grills yet?
Yeah. That might be a record.
That might be a record. That might be a record. We didn't bring that up. So we're evolving. We're moving on from that.
Yeah.
The grill's overplayed. We all get it. It's very controversial. It's growing on me. It's just going to derail everything in the comments because I posted a picture of an i4 or, you know, the 4 series that we have. I knew I was going to stir something up, but I didn't realize how much. I started my own personal Twitter, and so I was like, oh, this will get things going. So I said, hot or not? And yeah, wow.
Wait a minute. One of the commenters here said that Kyle mentioned it. Did you mention it earlier?
No, you very briefly. So. Kyle mentioned the grill on the i4, that you were driving or something.
All right, so you're the one telling me not to bring it up, and you mentioned it earlier.
I mentioned it on the 430.
Right. So, if you're watching us on YouTube, or if you want to watch us on watch the show back on YouTube, we were looking at some footage of the i4 or the iX, driving around, and you know, I think it looks. It looks like a bigger i3 in some ways. It's got some of the same styling things of the original i3, but with a, you know, bolder front end. It's fine. Yeah, it's.
I think it looks nice.
Yeah. So speaking of looking nice and bold front ends, the Toyota brought its BZ4X crossover concept to the U.S. the other day, and our sister site Motor One got to check it out and shoot some video of it. Now, this is a big deal vehicle. If for no other reason, it's a Toyota, and a lot of people have confidence in that brand, and they're quite likely to sell as many of these as they can possibly make. But anyway, although this is a concept, we're pretty sure it's extremely close to what the production version will look like when it goes on sale in about a year from now, I believe. So in the video, we have Brandon from Motor One walks us through the design inside and out. We don't have any of the performance details yet. We basically know it's an all-wheel drive, and I think should probably have a range, you know, 250, 300 miles. But what I really like about this video, I don't know if you can pull up the video, Martin, but what I like about it is that you get a better sense of what it looks like in real life than the promo shots that we've saw before. You know, plus he points out certain elements that I missed, like it's got little spoilers on the back of the rear glass, like a couple of them. It's kind of odd. And it's got some nice surfacing on the side, some interesting lines that you kind of, this video, you can really see everything really nicely. Now, I've already said maybe that this isn't my favorite design for you know, a crossover, but Tom, how does it grab you?
It grabs me like a RAV4 grabs me. It looks like a little bit of a more modern, futuristic RAV4 design, which surprises me that they're giving it its own name, especially that. And I forget, one of the journalists that I know, I saw it in the Twitter feed, said I always wanted to drive a vehicle whose name was like that of a copy machine, you know, like a BZ43. You know, I'm a little surprised why they didn't just call this the RAV4, you know, because it's like the next generation RAV4. It's almost identical in size and looks like a RAV4, except like maybe the next iteration lower, of what it would be. Maybe a little bit lower. Maybe a little bit lower, but I think it looks nice. I'm a fan of the RAV4. I think the RAV4 looks great. I'm a little concerned about I'm always concerned about Toyota with their electrification program, and I have good reason to feel that way. But the fact that they're separating with this new BZ line, the Beyond Zero line, almost as if they want to separate it from their core products. You know what I mean? Is that, you know, maybe I'm reading into it too much. Is that just like, you know, the fact that, you know, they're still not considering their electric vehicles, their core products, and they want to make like this little sub brand. But other manufacturers have done that too. I think it's just my Toyota bias coming out here. The vehicle itself looks good. I love the rear end of it. I think the rear end looks great. The front, I don't think it looks terrible. I don't think it looks fantastic. But I like the rear, as you mentioned earlier, with those small little dual spoilers. And the interior looks really, really interesting. You know, I'd want to sit in it. It's hard to get it from the pictures and the video. But I like it. You know, I'm, you know, welcome to the party, Toyota.
Yeah. So I'm not sure any idea when we're going to see a production version of this or get it in the media, Kyle? Is that still some months off or what?
Yeah, not sure. But, you know, it's a weird car. And the weirdest part about it is the speedometer, or at least the central information display. I think we made the joke last time. It's like you slammed on the brakes and the dash melted forwards. And it's very odd to look at the interior. The exterior has all this, you know, dual color stuff. I'm sure that's optional. You can kind of pick and choose however you want. It's the right size car. We know Toyotas do really well. The most, I think, desirable Toyota, at least from a demand standpoint, when in relation to supply, is the RAV4 Prime right now. They literally cannot build enough of them for our market. This is going to sell well. There's just people who only buy Toyotas. And look, I get it. Some people are saying they won't buy one because of marketing. It doesn't matter to me. I just judge the car. Is it a good car or not? Well, the marketing people didn't make the car. I don't really care what they're saying about it. As long as it's a good car, then it works for me. And that's what we need to judge. I think styling wise, it's god awfully ugly, but that wouldn't stop me from buying it if it was really good, right? Because I don't know. I just like, why does the steering wheel have to stick so far out in the middle and then the rim is back? Like I said, it's kind of like everything just got slid forwards. It's weird.
True. I never noticed that before.
Very weird. But yeah, it's gonna be a weird one, I think. It's something about it in terms of our testing, our EV nerdy stuff is gonna be really odd. It'll probably, you know, overheat or have weird charging bugs or one odd thing. I do not predict this to be a holistically well thought out, very competitive product, but we'll see. I mean, I overheat every Toyota plug-in hybrid that I've driven overheats on my morning mountain loop.
Well, that's something. People have a lot of, like I said, they have a lot of confidence in Toyota brand, and Toyota itself says, you know, when they're talking about this, they talk about their, you know, history and electrification. But hybrids and electric vehicles, they're similar, but they're not the same at all. You know, you can't just say because you're making an awesome hybrid, even an awesome plug-in hybrid, that your all-electric vehicle is going to be, you know, just as awesome.
Oh, totally separate. Yeah. Right. Totally separate. But honestly, does Toyota need to go so big into EV right now? I don't know. I'm not against them for not going so hard as a business decision. They're selling tons of combustion cars. We don't have the charging infrastructure to support if everyone bought an EV right now. So can you blame them for not wanting to go into it yet? I know I'm taking the exact opposite approach of Tom here, but I see where Toyota's coming from. I also don't see like a huge need to push towards electrification for them just yet. And someone said, I thought you like weird cars. I do like weird cars, so I'm sure this will fall into that category at some point. It's got to be so bad, it's good for me.
Right. Yeah, it's in the uncanny valley of weirdness for you.
It's not quite there yet. It's still too a little practical and normal for me.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to bite them on the behind. They're you know, late entry into all electric, but we'll see. And I'm hoping actually the Subaru version of this vehicle, which is also coming at some point, I think I'm really hoping they get the styling better on that one. Personally, I like the rear on this, but that's about it for me. I don't know.
Yeah, well, people will buy it regardless of styling. We've learned if it's priced well, it's from a brand that has good recognition. People buy ugly cars all the time, and that's fine. Good for them. Great, as long as they're happy. And I think that, you know, if Subaru makes an EV, there's diehard Subaru people. I know plenty of them. Half of them are in Colorado. Half of them are in Vermont. Two places I've spent most of my life. And this is, you know, they'll sell well.
Right on. So I wasn't going to mention this bit of news, but I was talking to somebody or exchanging some messages with somebody yesterday. And I mentioned that I'd never ridden in a Rolls before. Rolls-Royce, and they said that they'd have to see about changing that. And I said, only if it's electric. And they said, it's coming. And and so now we heard it was coming. It's going to be called the Silent Shadow, which I think is a great name. And but although they say it's coming, I mean, that conversation, they haven't said when it's coming, but that conversation made it feel like it's coming maybe sooner than later, and it's just like going to suddenly appear. So here's what we'll probably be looking at. It will probably share the BMW i7 powertrain and sit on a modified Phantom platform. So I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but Martin, you're a posh bloke. What do you think your posh friends will they be eager to add a Silent Shadow to their stables or what?
There's a few of those around where I live. I live in a very nice area. I'm not in a very nice house. You've seen my house. But I certainly live within a very close to Millionaire's Row, and there's a few of these that I've seen. Normally convertibles as well. They look terrible. Ooh, nice. And but of course electrification makes sense for a Rolls-Royce, because they spend how many hours trying to make their engines vibration-free, noise-free, packing the cabin to make it quiet, just put an electric powertrain in, and then you haven't got to spend all of your time doing that. And then you can and then worry more about all of the customizable features that Rolls-Royce buyers want in their car. So it makes total sense. And in all seriousness, all these car makers are looking at a future when combustion is banned and just plotting out when they go electric. And everyone's point is going to be different. And at some point, you know, Rolls-Royce buyers don't care about the technology inside. They care about the experience and make that experience amazing. A lot of them won't drive those cars themselves. Just make it a great experience and it'll be fine. You know,
they also won't drive them far. You know, if you own a Rolls-Royce, you don't go on an 800-mile road trip. Anything more than 100 miles or 200 miles, you're on a plane or a helicopter.
Private jet.
Or private jet. So, you know, it's perfect. There's every reason in the world for Rolls to go electric. I actually saw, do you remember they had a prototype Rolls made back in like 2012, I think it was. I saw it at one of the events that I was at, that BMW was brought this thing around the world, and they were actually bringing it. They were inviting current Rolls owners to see it and they were like surveying them and asking them, like, you know, would you consider an electric Rolls? This was like 10 years ago. But it's perfect.
Yeah. I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time on that. But we wanted to talk about the Tesla Model S Plaid because it's having this, we want to talk about that this week, but it's been delayed. So it's like a week. They need a week to tweak.
Well, we'll delay talking about it then. How about that?
Right, right. So it's pushed back to June 10th. So I think next Friday's show, I think we'll be talking about the Model S Plaid a bit here.
I really hope it is a handover event with real customers, because then we can get really excited about the engineering that's gone into this, and not, you know, if you think back to the first Model 3s that were given to the employees. You know, it was an event, it was a handover event, but it was a handful of hand-built one-offs. And then they took like a year to scale after that. So
yeah,
I hope
but those cars are the best ones, by the way.
Yeah.
I had a friend with one of those, and it's still running strong and built better than any new Model 3. It just feels right.
They built them all one-offs and gave them to staff for the handover event. I really hope that the Model S June 10th event is with, you know, real buyers, real people who then just get to take the car away and play with it and test out the awesome engineering that's gone into this. And there'll be a billion YouTube videos within minutes of people doing drag runs and stuff, because, you know, what is it like to drive with the yoke steering wheel and the, how is it going to work? How does the auto gear select the signal change? We want to know all these things.
Real people trying that stuff.
We can't wait.
I'm not sure what this event's going to be like. I think it's, you know, kind of missed the pre-COVID, you know, big mass gatherings of all of the Tesla fans and owners and things. It's not going to be like that.
It won't be like that. But hopefully at the event, they'll hand them over, and then they'll say, oh, and we've finished the design of the Cybertruck, and it looks like this.
Yes.
Even if they've not built one, even if it's like a screen with a render on, we just want to see what that final design looks like.
Yeah, that'll keep it going for another 2 years of coverage.
Right? We're just so curious about these things. You know, we don't need semi-truck news, we don't need roadster news, but we want, you know, the final one more thing moment, and that is the new, that's the signed-off Cybertruck design. We can't wait to see it.
Yes. Or a final roadster design, if that's changed at all.
That'd be cool. No. Okay. I mean, that's in a museum now. And
right.
That's...
Yeah, really, Cybertruck is really the vehicle. It's like, it's going to be a large production kind of vehicle. And it's going to be crazy. It is crazy.
Can't wait to see it.
Speaking of delayed vehicles, the Nissan Ariya, it's going to be delayed again. Let's see. You can now pre-order it if you're in Japan. Along with that news yesterday came the news this morning that it's also going to be delayed here somewhat. See, the limited edition of the car will arrive in Japan this winter. Nissan intends to open pre-orders in other initial markets, US, Europe, and China later this year. Nonetheless, it seems like the standard version and volume production will happen no earlier than at some point in 2022. So if you're on team Ariya, like I am, because I kind of like this, I want it to be good for Nissan. They need a hit. And I really like the interior, especially of this car. So, and the e-Force drivetrain is promising, I think. But yeah, it's not looking great as far as timeline goes. And the exterior is growing on me, but I don't know if anyone wants to talk about this real quick before we're almost done here, but we have one more thing that we want to talk about. Tom, do you want to talk about this? Do you want to talk about the Spark Charge?
Yeah, there's not much to really say about the Ariya that we haven't covered. I'm not a huge fan of the front hood line. If Martin, if you could pull that back up, just seems so high. The front of the vehicle seems so chunky to me. I'm not a fan of that. Right. That maybe it's just, you know, in pictures when I see it in person, but it just seems like the front is way too chunky and thick. And I'm just not in love with the lines. I don't hate it, but of the new crossovers that are out, the Mach-E, the ID4, the Hyundai Ioniq 5, this probably brings up the rear in my opinion, right, for what's right for me. But as you said, I do hope it does well for Nissan. They need it.
Even that BZ4X had a longer hood line than this one does.
Well, I've spent a couple times, I think three times now, with the Nissan Ariya in person, and it hasn't gotten any better for me. It's not gotten any worse. It's just another car that's like, you know, we see Nissan Rogues on the road. People buy those. They'll buy these. And it's got a Zen garden carpet. How about that?
So I wanted to mention that. Yeah. I love that. If you look at if you go to the post on our site this morning, it's on this. Yeah, so this morning, bring up the photo gallery, check out the carpets. It's got like a little special.
That's a reason to buy the car right there. Those
it is for me.
Come on, that's nice. It really helps with the turn in and handling characteristics. But no, cool. Let's talk Spark Charge.
Yeah, real quick. Yeah.
Okay.
So they're offering a mobile. Sorry, I was just going to say they're offering a mobile EV charging service for only $25 per month. Tom, is that true? Good to be true?
It kind of sounds it to me, and I've talked to them about it. We don't have all the program details. Now, that obviously won't be an unlimited charging service at that price point. They're going to come out with different price points depending on how much energy, how much you drive each month. But, I mean, it's a really interesting concept. Right now, they're in Dallas, San Francisco, and L.A., and they're going to go to other cities. Basically, they're providing this service called Charge Up. Okay. And you can schedule your car to be charged, but you can also on demand or pull up the app and just kind of say, hey, I'm at Costco. I need you to come and charge my car. I don't know how responsive they're going to be with that, but they claim that in these markets, they'll be able to be fairly responsive. So like I said, if you pull up to a Costco and say, I need you to charge my car, I'm going to be out of here in like an hour and a half. So during that period, I need you to come and charge my car. A car will come over and plug in and charge your car with their mobile charging unit. I'm still trying to get my hands around how sustainable this concept is. But
right.
they claim that they've got this worked out, and they had this annual They call it their Spark Day event. They did one last year, and they introduced this new service called Charge Up. They also introduced their new roadie system, that CCS. The previous mobile charging system that they had, their first one that came out was CHAdeMO only. And they did that because they can then use a CHAdeMO adapter to recharge Tesla vehicles. And, you know, Tesla vehicles account for, 80% of the electric vehicles on the market in the U.S., something like that. So they needed to have a system that would charge Tesla vehicles. That's why they came out with CHAdeMO first. Now they have the new Roadie CCS. So now they can charge any electric vehicle with this, with either one of their Roadie systems. So yeah, it's an interesting concept. I'm still trying to figure out how they can do it for $25 a month. And they claim that it might actually end up costing you less than what you would pay if you used your own electricity at home. So one of the company officials that I spoke to said people that actually have like a level two charger at their house might opt to use their service because it'll be cheaper. I still can't figure that out.
Not possible. I think this is, can I be brutally honest for a
second?
Sure,
sure.
I think this is dumb, and I'll explain to you why. You ever heard of those Amazon, when Amazon partnered with Volvo and they would deliver packages into your trunk wherever your car was? The right. thing was, you'd say, okay, I've parked my car here. Let me run into Target. Oh, they actually didn't have what I'm looking for. I'm going to drive away. And then now, oh, wait, the guy shows up the Amazon truck, the Volvo's gone. So you're saying I'm going to go into a store. I'm going to then remember that, oh, wait, I paid for this silly service. I'm going to then wait 30 minutes or whatever it is for them to drive all the way to my location and then charge my car at, 30 kilowatts this thing does, maybe? And so then that's going to take an hour and a bit. And then I'm, like, standing outside of Walmart waiting for my car to charge when I could just go plug it into the EA station or, more conveniently, just plug it in at home. You know, my Tesla is broken. My passenger seat doesn't move. And maybe it's just me, but I have like anxiety about scheduling a service appointment because I'm like, oh, I need to make sure I'm free on that day. Even if they come to my house and I don't know what my schedule is. And it's just so easy to know I can just plug this thing in at home, or I can go to a fast charger on my own schedule, even if it takes a little longer and maybe it costs me more. I don't think this is going to work. I think it's like those mobile refueling trucks that go around and fill up your cars in parking lots. And that is a scheduling nightmare. I know people who signed up for that and it's been a terrible experience. So I think it'll work for businesses that have, like, if you work for Apple and Apple says, oh, we're going to have Spark Charge come and charge every one of your cars a couple times a month, whatever it is.
And how about apartment buildings, Kyle? That, I think that's their main use. You live in an apartment complex, you're parked in their garage or the parking lot, and you don't have access to charging. You can schedule this to say, every Tuesday and Friday, you know, at 7 a.m., I need my car charged.
And then you're going to be gone one of those mornings and the dude's going to be wasting his whole day waiting for you.
Well, you'd have to pull out your app and change your charging schedule or whatever.
It's annoying, I think. Yeah. I don't think this is the solution. Mm-hmm. I think this causes more problems.
I think
a better solution would be just put in wall outlets or NEMA 1450s in apartment complexes. Apartment complexes need to stop spending $7,000 on those charge point two post units and charging just 12 cents for the energy. What you should do is just put NEMA 1450s in. No one will ever use the amount of difference in electricity you just spend as a business to then be able to charge for the electricity, which was $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000. Just put NEMA 1450s everywhere. Solves the problem.
Well, also a lot of level one, I think, too. I think apartment complex would do just fine with banks of 20 amp level one circuits. And then, like you said, some of the 1450s. But I think there's use case for this. I don't think it's for everybody. But I think think Spark Charge is still kind of finding their way to exactly what's the best use for this roadie system. Now, obviously, roadside service, they're already using it in roadside service. It needs to, I think this is an early iteration. I think it's going to expand, maybe be able to charge quicker, maybe have more battery. Right now, it comes in either a 3.5 kilowatt, 7 or 14. 7. Two of them, 7, 10.5 and 14 kilowatt hour versions. Because each of these modules are 3.5 kilowatt hour, and you can either stack 2, 3, or 4. So that's not enough to say charge 5 or 6 cars, so the
problem with this
needs to evolve.
System, The problem with this roadie system is that it uses batteries to then charge more batteries. They should just pull out a big-ass diesel generator and charge these cars up in 2 seconds. I'm being totally serious. I get it's not as good for the planet. Whatever. You can convince me on that. But practicality must come forward at some point. And having to haul around hundreds of pounds of batteries to only have 10 kilowatt hours to then put in someone's car – that's dumb. What you can do is just put a diesel generator in the back of a pickup truck, have all the fuel you want or whatever you think you're going to do, and then you can just charge everyone really fast if you need it. So
But you can't because a diesel generator isn't going to put out 40 kilowatt.
Yeah, it is. Oh, diesel generators will put out hundreds of kilowatts.
Yeah, but it has to be a monster unit.
Yeah, you just put it in the back of the truck. Bolt it in.
So it's like almost time to go. So we can pick this up again next week. I just want to say we have somebody watching us on Twitch. If you want to watch us on Twitch, please do that. We need people to watch us on Twitch. So we can go to the next level of whatever. They have different levels. And I also wanted to say that, so Anthony C. reminds us that the Kia EV6, if you wanted to reserve one, that opened up yesterday for 1,500 first edition cars, and their website didn't work. So you couldn't do that. And looks like they're going to have a do-over on June 8th. So thank you very much for sharing that with us, Anthony, you see. And we do have some prospective owners on the Inside EVs forum. So if you are going to reserve, come over there and tell us about why you want an EV6 and share your experience with us, because we'd love that. It looks like a great car once Kia gets its stuff together. All right. All right, so that brings us to the end of our show. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section below, or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. Please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom Malogny is at Tomolog. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at Out of Spec, and I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.